This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. And let me check the old calendar. Oh, it's Wednesday. Wednesdays with Wes continue award-winning. Some people are saying you could follow him on social media at WesReynolds1. I'm at 1, Tim Murray. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. I mentioned it yesterday. I think we should have some sort of bowl competition with some listeners. So if you've got some ideas, hit me up on Twitter at 1, Tim Murray. I've got some things that I'm going around in the head, but we got to have some sort of purse for the winner. But I digress. I'm just talking out loud. Let's bring in Wes Reynolds, the pride of Indiana University. And Mr. Reynolds, the penultimate rankings came out on Tuesday night, but I think you have to be pretty happy about it, right?
Tim, good to be with you. And yeah, award-winning actually sounds better than critically acclaimed. We just haven't gotten our actual hardware in the mail for being award-winning just as of yet. But yeah, look, a very good weekend for the Hoosiers. 66-0, anytime you could beat your rival by that much. And look, I'm a hypocrite about this because usually I don't like that. Usually I don't like running up a score, but I've been there in person where Indiana's been on the short end of a 52-7 when Drew Brees was the Purdue quarterback and all these Purdue people had roses and it just made me sick to my stomach. So I was glad Kurt Cignetti went for a fake punt up 38-0 and put the pedal to the metal. This guy's a psycho and I love it. And he wins 66-0 in his first bucket game. And Tim, I feel a lot more comfortable with Indiana being in the playoff. I think that they are in the playoff. I don't see any scenario where they're going to drop out. But it would borderline on the apocalypse happening, I think, for them to host a game at Memorial Stadium. So Indiana is going to be traveling somewhere, likely Athens, Austin, or perhaps even South Bend.
Yeah, and I think the Notre Dame angle is interesting. And I want to jump into this because I said this a little bit yesterday on the podcast, which was I'm not convinced, like the betting market is, FanDuel and DraftKings to be specific, that Alabama's in. Now, Alabama is in if SMU wins the ACC championship, but they're only a 2.5-point favorite, are the Ponies, against Clemson, in a place that is very familiar to for Clemson, I should say. Let's just start with the odds. Plus 285 is the number right now for Alabama to miss the playoff. And it's at FanDuel, so, you know, we got to get a little creative, maybe take a drive over a state border if you want to bet this where we sit. But many people listening do have access to those national shops. I'm curious your thoughts on the Alabama situation. It's pretty clear Miami, South Carolina, and Ole Miss, bye-bye. It really comes down to if SMU loses, do they get bumped or do they stay in? And that's the big question. So I'm curious your take on it from a gambling standpoint with SMU and Alabama, with SMU playing Clemson on Saturday night.
You know, Tim, like reading between the lines last night, and that's sometimes what you have to do, I think, with this selection committee, and it's Ward Manuel, by the way, the athletic director at Michigan. That's the guy that has to come on and do the inenviable task of doing that interview every week to explain the rankings. But, you know, it made it seem like, boy, SMU could really get the short end of the stick, I think, in this whole deal. And that was left open, I think, clearly with Alabama not only being right there in the rankings, but almost like SMU could be getting punished, if you will, for making a conference championship game in its first year in the Atlantic Coast Conference. So, you know, and that kind of would be terrible. Now, I think FanDuel has them at minus 480. So it's kind of like, you know, which would you rather bet? Would you rather bet, you know, SMU just on the money line here? Or would you rather, you know, go into these playoff markets? And I'm not sure, like, if I'm SMU, and I think, you know, when the ratings came out, look, do you think like the ACC title game means nothing? It clearly is going to have to mean a lot for these guys, but you know, it almost feels like they do get punished here, and I think that that's a little bit unfair for the Mustangs, but you know, they're going to have to win now. And like you mentioned, Miami's out. Like, Miami has no chance now. I did not expect they were going to drop all the way out of the rankings. I thought maybe they'd go down to 11 or 12 where it'd be like, okay, they're the bubble boy in this entire situation. But Miami, yeah, they're absolutely out, I think, right now. So, you know, SMU winning in situation for the Mustangs over Clemson.
Yeah, and what the quote that was out there from Ward Manuel, who, by the way, yikes, not good yesterday. I thought he was very much exposed, but I try to keep things from a gambling standpoint. And he said that when asked, could SMU drop below Alabama with a loss, he said, quote, potentially, yes. And I alluded to it yesterday on the podcast with Adam that Brett McMurphy was pretty adamant on VSiN Primetime that SMU, if they lose close, will still get in. And I believe that to be the case too. So I think personally, the money line, and let me just run this by you. I like kind of doing things out loud. Okay. So SMU right now is a consensus minus 135 favorite, minus $1.45 against Clemson at Circa. Plus 125 is the highest money line at Clemson, but consensus is plus 115. I bring that up because if you think Clemson can win this game or will win this game, I think you get a little creative. I'm not saying half unit, maybe a quarter unit, but I think what you do, Wes, is you put maybe three quarters of a unit on Clemson, and then if you have access to a book that bets it, I put a quarter unit on Alabama to miss the playoff at plus 285. I think the precedent that could be set where, unlike last year, and I think this is the point that people are missing. Look, last year, Alabama beat Georgia to get into the playoff and knock out Florida State, which was not ideal for Florida State, obviously. But this weekend, Alabama's not playing. Indiana is not playing. Ohio State's not playing. Tennessee's not playing. So SMU, and I've seen the joke being, you know, thrown out there that SMU should just joke and say like, we got COVID. We're not playing in this game.
Right.
So, you know, I just look, if they win this game, it's all moot and they go, they get a bye and SMU and Alabama's in. But I just call me crazy. I just think SMU's still going to find a way in, whether it be in the eight spot that they're in, they'll probably drop off of that. Maybe they go to the 10 spot at Indiana, bumps back to 11 and plays Notre Dame. But I think SMU losing to a ranked team on a neutral field would be quite the precedent to set when 2 weeks ago, Alabama lost as a 2-touchdown favorite by 3 scores.
Absolutely. And look, and you've had, and we talked about that last week, where Alabama and Ole Miss, both losses almost 2-touchdown road favorites, and they drop 5 spots. Like, yet Ohio State loses as 3-touchdown home favorites, and they drop 4 spots. So, you know, it is very arbitrary, and it is very subjective here. But, yeah, Alabama, I think, being in that spot now requires SMU a little bit of SMU to win. But perhaps if it's close, there's a little bit of wiggle room there. And I don't think your philosophy or your angle there is too necessarily far off the mark, because I just don't see any of these teams that are out that aren't playing somehow finagling their way in. And that would be Miami. That would be South Carolina. That would be Ole Miss. I just don't see it at this standpoint.
Do you think, Wes, when the bracket is set, you will find yourself looking at the futures market to see if there's a team or teams to back based off of their draw? Because I bring it up with Notre Dame, and I think Westgate was at 12-1 earlier this week, and Notre Dame could end up with a really tricky draw. They could get Alabama in the first round, but let's say hypothetically Notre Dame jumps Penn State if they were to lose to Oregon, and Notre Dame plays, for argument's sake, Arizona State, and then they play Boise State. They're a pretty significant favorite in both of those games. Could you find yourself come Sunday looking at the national championship futures market based off of how the bracket unfolds?
I think so. And I think what we've seen over the last several weeks when the brackets have been brought out, that five seed is not a bad position to be in. In that college football playoff, because you look and who's going to be the four seed, it's going to be the Big 12 champion. So it's going to be Arizona State or Iowa State, or it's going to be Boise State. And the five, which could be Notre Dame or could be Penn State, would obviously have to travel there. And if you're traveling to play Arizona State, the home field disadvantage is not as much, I think, as a disadvantage, even though Arizona State has had a terrific season. I think that's where you want to be, where you're kind of getting in that mix, where you're playing the lower end conference champions and you're avoiding until the semifinals, assuming Oregon goes ahead and remains undefeated and handles business. You avoid that until the semifinals. So I think whoever ends up as the five seed is going to have the better path, you would say, at least at the bare minimum, to the semifinals.
Yeah, and the way it's breaking down this year, if you're the five seed, Notre Dame, Penn State, most likely maybe Texas if they were to lose to Georgia, you're not going to be a big underdog in the semifinals. So it will be interesting to see how it all plays out. All right, one more rankings to come, obviously, on Sunday. Maybe we'll sneak in a podcast on Sunday at some point during the day to talk about how the bracket unfolded. But let's take a quick break. Wednesdays with Wes. We try to keep this pretty quick, so we'll take a quick break. When we come back, 9 conference championship games. We'll run through them all. Any best bets that we're looking at, we'll hit those as well. Stick around. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Just a reminder, the VSiN Watch app is available wherever you get your apps, Google Play Store, Apple App Store. It's free, and you get our podcast there as well. So it's hard not to stumble across our podcast, and hopefully many of you did acquiesce to our request at Thanksgiving dinner just to throw in, instead of political talk, hey, the College Football Betting Podcast is where you should be focusing your attention here.
Yeah, but college football talk can be more dangerous than political talk, depending on which circles you're in.
That's a good point. I have a good buddy of mine who is a Miami fan who was none too pleased on Saturday's performance. I was pleased, at least with the Syracuse cover. I didn't need them to win the game outright, but one of the few, excuse me, live sneeze on the podcast. All right, let's run through it. Friday night, we've got 3 games, and let's start on the banks of the Hudson River, Mikey Stadium, West Point, New York, Tulane and Army. I know many of us were on UTSA last week, so thank you to that missed field goal late in the game. That was very helpful to a UTSA cover there for the Roadrunners. But Army right now, market's been interesting on this game. It's gotten as high as 6, low as 4 right now as we record this on Wednesday. It's 4.5, 5, so depending on what side you want to be in. I did see a bet from you come into the VSiN picks page, so walk us through the way that you're looking to attack an 8 o'clock kickoff on Friday night in New York.
Yeah, and ordinarily I would be on a Service Academy dog because we know that that's been very profitable for over the last 2-3+ decades, but not necessarily here. And that UTSA game that you mentioned that we were on, I felt like we were the right side, even though we were outside the number for most of the game. But it kind of played out like we thought. UTSA very good against the run, top 10 nationally, and Army had one of their lowest outputs in terms of the run. Actually threw the ball 17 times, surprisingly enough, did Bryson Daly. But I'm on the wave here, and I know the last impression of Tulane was not a good one, considering they go on the road Thanksgiving night. They were 2 touchdown favorites at Memphis, and they lose outright. So you have to discount them and demerit them for that performance, right? But then this goes down to 4 as an opener. I'm like, this team was laying 2 touchdowns on the road, And less than a week later, they're only laying 4. And I thought that I think if you're looking to take Army, I don't think you're getting a fair price here necessarily. If you like Army, you're wanting 6.5 or 7. I think that's more of the fair price. And that's why I ultimately laid Tulane. The unranked teams against the ranked teams in conference title games have been about 16-9 against the number. Tulane is the one in that scenario here. And then we talked about it last week and you brought that up and you sent the tweet out on X about these teams that after the week they play Notre Dame that they haven't covered. Add another one to that where Army did not cover against UTSA. And there's a reason behind that, I think, because however good or wherever you think Notre Dame should rank right now in the pecking order of this college football season, they're a tough physical team. And when you play a tough physical team, I don't care how tough and physical you are as a team, you get beat up a little bit. And I think Army maybe showed a little bit of signs of that. And now they had to play another game against UTSA, which is a very competitive game. Now you have a conference title game, and then you, of course, have the Army-Navy game next week. Now, I don't think there's any, like, look ahead or anything like that here. This is for a conference title. So the motivation is going to be there for Army. There's not a doubt about that. They're going to be motivated. But it's got to be motivation combined with just the raw physical energy. If that makes sense. And I just wonder how much is left for Army, because they, you know, having that Notre Dame game and being undefeated for so long in the season. And I also think just when you look at the matchup standpoint here, Army has played a relatively easy schedule. Tulane has played a little tougher schedule. Of course, they played Kansas State, only lost by 7. That was a game they led, actually, most of the game. Kansas State had a late run in the fourth quarter. And then they also played Oklahoma. Army's only played one Power Four, if you will. Notre Dame lost 49-14. John Sumrall has really gotten the better of Army. He's only faced him twice when he was at Troy, but won 19-0 last year, where they almost doubled him in yardage and then beat him 10-9 in 2022. So John Sumrall also, I read an article, he has these guys practice against the option, because they knew that they were probably going to play Army. So they've been practicing a little bit of their Mondays, have been prepping for this option. Plus, they get a couple extra days of prep, being that they played on Thanksgiving night. So, yeah, I think this line has been a little bit too discounted just from the matchup standpoint and also from the experience standpoint. This is the third straight trip to the American title game for Tulane. Army's never been here before. So I think that that's going to matter. And you might have a competitive game early, but then Tulane just kind of wears them down in the second half. So I laid the wave.
Yeah. I haven't gotten there yet. I'm curious where this number goes. It'll probably be a play for me. I was debating whether I do a money line parlay with someone else, but that might be a situation where I'm getting too cute. But I really like Tulane in this spot. And let's bring up the game they played against Navy. Now, worth noting, Blake Horvath was not healthy in this game. And when he doesn't play, they're a different offense. But Navy did nothing against Tulane at home. They were held to 113 yards in that contest. So John Sumrall, to your point, has fared quite well against the triple option. So I agree with you. I'm going to see what the market does. But ultimately, I think we are both going to be in unison here on Tulane and Army. A game that I have yet to bet, and you and I watched this game in person about 6 weeks ago, which was UNLV and Boise State. And they played this game, of course, at Allegiant Stadium. Now they'll be playing up at Albertson Stadium there on the Smurf Turf. 29-24 was the final score back in October. A very fun game to watch. Very equal. I thought Ashton Genty was, for the most part, bottled up, ran for just 3.9 yards per carry. But what's interesting to note about this one is that, one, I don't think Boise State has been playing their best football heading into this game whatsoever. When you look at a fortunate win 2 weeks ago against Wyoming, the crazy backdoor cover or front door cover, however you want to say it, against San Jose State, probably should have lost in Nevada. But is this another situation, Wes, where you're looking at a price that is pretty discounted when UNLV was catching, 4.5 when they played them at home, and now they're catching 4 on the road?
Yeah, I would like to catch a little bit more here with UNLV, and that's the side I actually prefer in this game because, number one, just to keep it simple, they're playing better football, I think, down the stretch of the season. Because if you look at Boise State, after they held on and they beat UNLV in Allegiant, where we were several Friday nights ago, they did run out San Diego State. But ever since then, 7-point win against Nevada. The backdoor cover against San Jose State, where they had no business winning by 21, but they did. One of the worst beats of the year, if you're a regular college football better week to week. Barely got by Wyoming. I mean, only out-yarded them like 30 yards, and this is a bad Wyoming team that is way down and couldn't get away from them. And against Oregon State last week, it was a 9-point game throughout most of the fourth quarter. They got a late touchdown because I think they wanted to get Genty another one, or try to at least there at the end, and, you know, try to get him to get the rushing yards record. But Boise State has, you know, I wonder if they've peaked him. I wonder if they have. And I'm waiting to see if maybe people bet Boise State on the basis of the weather, you know, that you're presumably going to have cold temperatures up there on the Smurf turf. However, if you look a couple weeks ago with UNLV, it wasn't snow, but they played that game on a Friday night at San Jose State. Nasty, rainy weather. It was windy. It was cold. And UNLV, I think, you know, showed a lot of grit and a lot of toughness. Got off to a slow start, but held up well and ended up kind of really pulling away from San Jose State there, up there at Spartan Stadium. So I like what UNLV is doing here. And I wonder, too, if this is kind of like the coup de grace, if you will, of the Barry Odom era. Like, Barry Odom, I'm sure, is going to be getting some nibbles there in the coaching carousel. You know, so maybe this is the end, and they feel like this is the end for this generation, and maybe Barry Odom goes somewhere else, and then Brennan Marion, the architect of the go-go offense, gets promoted to head coach, that maybe they feel like this is their last time together, and they want to accomplish something. And they want to leave a legacy for this team. And a legacy would be winning the Mountain West Championship and getting into the college football playoff. And look, certainly Boise State wants to do the same. But I like the way UNLV is playing. I think they've had a lot of adversity this year. Remember, Boise State had the adversity last year when Avalos got the heave-ho, yeah, and then Spencer Danielson was the interim. And then he eventually got the full-time gig and has it this year. And I wonder, UNLV, I think, had that adversity with the kid Hulka going in the transfer portal, didn't whatever happened there.
Saluka,
with his,
yeah.
Saluka, whatever his name is. He's long forgotten because UNLV is on the verge of the college football playoff here in Las Vegas. But, you know, NIL promises kept or not kept or whatever the hell happened there. But they rallied around Hodge Malik Williams. And I think he's their guy. And when you have adversity like that, you are so close and you're on the precipice, you want to finish. And I think UNLV finishes here. I do want to wait and see if I can get a little bit better number before Friday, but more than likely I'm going to have something on the Rebels here.
Yeah, it's funny. Last year I was just looking back in my file, and my second biggest bet of championship weekend was Boise State at Allegiant Stadium. And I don't know if I'm going to get there this weekend. It's worth noting this too, and I'm sure we'll talk about more about this on the Thursday pod as well, but you got to wonder about the gas tank of Ashton Genty right now. Since October 12th, 31, 33, 31, 34, 32, 19 carries against Wyoming, 37 carries on Friday against Oregon State. He has 312 carries. He's been amazing this year, but we'll see. UNLV did a very nice job, as mentioned, at Allegiant Stadium, holding him to just 3.9 yards per carry. That was his worst performance by far of the season from an efficiency standpoint. The only game this year he's been held under 4 yards per carry, only game he's been held under 4.5 yards per carry, and only other team that held him under 5 yards per carry was San Diego State. His over-under, by the way, for those wondering, 170.5. All right, one more game on Friday night. We just saw it happen. Western Kentucky kicked a 50-yard field goal to beat Jacksonville State on Saturday to get the rematch in the Conference USA Championship game. The Fighting Rich Rodriguez is one of the biggest favorites of the weekend, a weekend in which we have no favorites 6 points or higher. Any thoughts on Western Kentucky and Jacksonville State on Friday night?
Yeah, and I ended up being, I guess, kind of on the right side there late. The money went to Jacksonville State, yeah, even though Western Kentucky had everything to play for. And Carnero hits the field goal with a few seconds left from 50 yards, even though Western Kentucky was kind of messing up that sequence in terms of the time management. But their kicker, who's been one of the better ones in college football, bailed them out. So you get the rematch here, this time at Amfirst Stadium down there in Jacksonville. Nothing on the side. On the side here for me, but I kind of like the over here at 57.5. Rich Rod, look, they run the football and they run the quarterback a lot, Tyler Huff, and you know, they can get explosives in that running game, no question about it. Huff, by the way, 1,176 on the ground. Trey Stewart, the running back, 1,400 on the ground. So this is a team, don't mistake that, oh, they're going to slow the game down because they run. They run tempo and they run it very well. Logan Smothers, by the way, a very good backup. So, you know, if Huff is not 100%, they could certainly use him there, because Huff, by the way, did leave in the third quarter last week with injury. But that's not a huge drop off, I don't think, to Smothers necessarily. Western Kentucky had the motivation edge, so I don't think that there's a different motivation edge necessarily this week. Jacksonville State has been the better team, I think, all season. They've been the better team in Conference USA. Now, I wonder, you know, we've been hearing some of these rumors that we could have Rich Rod returning to Morgantown, perhaps to West Virginia. And, you know, people scoff at that, but apparently he's a candidate. I know former Mountaineer player Pat McAfee has said, yeah, he's part of the conversation. I think Pat would know, you know, or at least have some good sources. Of course, everybody points to Jimbo Fisher being a West Virginia guy, that he would be logical. But, you know, I don't know if it's a distraction as of yet. I really can't handicap that. So I think that this is going to be a high scoring game, though. I think, you know, let it all hang out here. This is not for a playoff spot. This is just for the Conference USA championship. So it was a low scoring game last week in Bowling Green at Western Kentucky, just because I think of the weather conditions. Doesn't look like the weather might be that much of a factor. It'll be a little chilly, as it usually is in December across America. So I like the over here at 57.5. You're starting to see a couple 58 show, but this might be one of those happy action fun time games where there's something on the line, but it's not as much on the line as some of these other games. So I think the offense is going to have a very good evening in Jacksonville, Alabama.
All right, three games on Friday and six games on Saturday. Noon window, you've got Iowa State, Arizona State, and Ohio versus Miami of Ohio. The Red Hawks are your defending MAC champions. They beat Toledo last year as around a touchdown underdog. And then the Bobcats have not won this conference, I believe, since 1968. That was always the talking point with Frank Solich. They never could get there. Right now, the point spread 2.5, total 44.5. I usually like to play unders in the MAC championship. I played it last year. These two teams did play earlier this year, Miami of Ohio winning 30-20. And from a box score standpoint, I'll be honest, I have not gone back and watched this game. I should, but it looks like a pretty evenly played game. Ohio turned the ball over a couple times, and it seems like that might have been the difference. But any thoughts on the MAC championship at Ford Field on Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, we get a second battle for the bricks this year between Ohio and Miami. Miami, not surprising that they're here. They're the defending champ. They've made a lot of appearances in this game. Ohio is an absolute shocker, though, because this team got, I don't know if any team got ransacked more in FBS in the portal than did Ohio University, notably Curtis Rourke, who is now at my alma mater, Indiana. And what a job Tim Albin did. Like, he won't get a lot of Coach of the Year consideration. I think we know who that is going to be. That's going to be Mr. Cignetti. But, man, he should be at least a finalist if they had that, because he's done a hell of a job with Ohio this year, losing so much from that team. Miami, of course, Brett Gabbert comes back, I believe, for his sixth season now, as he got hurt last year. And it was Abion Smith that led him to the MAC title game. Gosh, Tim, this is probably one of the harder games, I think, for me to get a read on. I would lean a little bit under, and the market is certainly doing that at 44.5. I think Miami is the better team, but I think Ohio's got to feel like they're playing with house money here. that it's like nobody expected us to be here. Miami was predicted to be here, but before the season, they were the favorite, and they lived up to that. Kind of a rough start because they played a really tough non-conference, but then really got it right in conference play. So if I do anything, maybe a small play to the under. I think Miami's slightly better, but I think this is a coin flip, and I think the odds indicate that.
Yeah, 2.5, as you mentioned. All right, Iowa State, Arizona State. We've seen a flip of favorites here in this one. Arizona State is now a 2-point favorite. I believe they opened at some shops at +1. So once again, not moving through any key numbers. DraftKings, I'm looking at their history. Looks like they did start Iowa State 1. I haven't bet this game yet. I'm kind of looking a little bit at the Cyclones here. Arizona State has been an incredible story, what Kenny Dillingham has done. And I know there's that trend that Felica always tweets out about Matt Campbell and these kind of coin toss games and how much he struggled in them. But Arizona State laying 2 here at Jerry's World on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, ASU, the second best team in the country when you look at point spread record, I believe 10-2 this year. There's 2 teams, by the way, and we'll get to one of them later, the other being Marshall, that have double-digit wins against the number this year. And ASU has been a big surprise. Kenny Dillingham's done a great job with those guys. I thought that they would make a little leap this year, but not this much of a leap. But they benefited, I think, from some favorable scheduling spots. Certainly, Cam Scadabo, almost 1,400 yards. The quarterback has certainly been an upgrade with Sam Levitt. But I think this could be, and I have not bet this yet either, Tim, I think this could be the time where maybe Matt Campbell gets over the hump in a big game finally, because they haven't won the conference title, but they did win their final did win 7 games to start out before they got upset by Texas Tech at home and then lost to Kansas in Arrowhead. But they didn't give up. They rallied to win their last 3 games, got Kansas State there on Saturday night. I think against common opponents, Iowa State has been a little bit better than Arizona State. If you look at the 6 common Big 12 opponents, I think they've been outgaining them by like 50 yards. Meanwhile, Arizona State like minus 20 yards average against those common opponents. Campbell is the more experienced coach. It's, you know, the best team he certainly had here in several years. So I think Iowa State is what I might end up being on. I have not bet this as of yet. It's down there at 2. I'd certainly like to get 3. I don't think that's going to happen with the total getting bet under earlier today, down as low as 49.5. But the Clones is likely the way of where I am going to go if I play this one, Tim.
All right, let's go to the afternoon. We're going chronologically. The only game in that afternoon window is the big boy, no longer on CBS, which will be a bit surprising. It will be on ABC, Georgia and Texas. Texas trending towards 3. We'll see if we get there. Tip of the cap to Texas. I was wrong. I was on A&M. Their defense really stepped up in that spot. Still have questions about the offense for Texas. Georgia, of course, went down to Austin, won by 2 touchdowns. They're coming off of the 8 overtime marathon a week ago. Both these teams are playoff bound, but obviously if Georgia wins, they'd get the bye. Texas would then fall probably to the number 5 seed. You know, this is a Texas team that I've had a lot of questions about, and you know, their best win to date, I guess, is Texas A&M, who drops out of the playoff rankings. You look down at that game that they played in Austin, really didn't get much going offensively, but the defense was solid. You know, I really would love to bet under here, but on that fast track, it always makes me a little bit nervous between these two teams. So what do you make of Georgia, Texas?
Yeah, in terms of the total, the trend's not your friend if you like the under here, because it is indoors. 13-5-1, by the way, down there in Atlanta, SEC title games to the over, because look, they usually are going to have the best players or at least the best athletes on those teams, and you get on a fast track. That's why I think it's been really hard, even though if you're doing favorites, underdogs, over unders, it's probably about 50%. It's basically a coin flip either side. So there's really no, okay, play all the dogs or play all the favorites or play all the overs or unders. But in the SEC, it certainly has been an over here. I think that you would get a better start certainly out of Texas than you did earlier this year. Remember, it was 23-0 Georgia down there at Darryl Royal Stadium in Austin, 170-38 yard advantage for the Dogs in the first half. But I did for the first time get a little bit impressed with Texas last week, because I was also on A&M, and then, you know, we know that they were been banged up at running back all year, and then Wisner runs for a career high 186 yards, and we can't complain about A&M, even though there was the chance to get lucky there and they don't convert there at the end. But Texas, I think, was the clear right side in that game. And meanwhile, Georgia Tech goes to what, 8 overtimes against Georgia Tech. Probably should have lost the game. There were a couple shaky calls that I thought went the Dog's way, but that's neither here nor there. I would expect maybe a better start out of Texas in this game, knowing that that's what they've had to hear about all year. Who the hell have you guys beat? And in the one game, you know, you got housed at home. So, you know, maybe Texas first half here. I think there's one out there. There might be. I think there's 1.5 at DraftKings with a little bit of juice to the Bulldogs. But maybe Texas lay in the first half here is probably the way I would go. But both these teams now know that they're in the playoffs. Certainly you want to cap it off and win the SEC and be the beast of that conference. But, you know, I guess it's the loser gets the right to host the Hoosiers perhaps in the in the college football playoffs. So, you know, but don't be thinking you could jake this game and lose for the easier opponent. Indiana is going to show up with nothing to lose. But I would say Texas first half. I would expect a much better start out of these guys than we saw earlier in the season.
So you mentioned Arizona State 10-2 against the number. Marshall also 10-2 against the number. Weird kind of situation brewing, though, where Charles Huff has been linked to the Southern Miss job. He was on the hot seat a year ago. Here they are in this championship game of the Sun Belt, taking on UL Lafayette. It is the biggest spread of the entire weekend. There is a 6 out there right now at Circa, 5.5s across the board. UL Lafayette, Marshall, this one is a home site. There's a couple home sites this weekend. The only home site on Saturday will be Saturday night down in the Bayou. What do you make of this one? Total 56.5, Marshall and the Raging Cajuns.
Yeah, Marshall's first time in the Sun Belt title game. Of course, they were in previous Conference USA where they did make it 3 times. ULL has been in this game 5 times, but only won it once back in 2021. And Billy Napier, derided as Sun Belt Billy, even though Florida's playing better football here at the end of the year. They won it in his final hurrah before he went off to Gainesville. Yeah, this is a really weird situation, Tim, with Charles Huff, because like his contract is expiring, and it's like, are they making a vested interest, or do they think he's just purely gone to Southern Miss? Because it would seem like, okay, got him in the championship game, they won in overtime at James Madison last week, so, you know, Marshall, I think a little bit of a surprise that they are here. But this is what worries me about this team is against the run. They've given up over 200 yards plus rushing about 4 times in Sun Belt play. Gave up almost 250 last week to James Madison. And the Raging Cajuns do run the ball pretty darn well, I would say. And the Cajuns, I think, have been the best team in the Sun Belt all year. They're 10-2. Their 2 losses came by 8 points or less. Schedule of strength certainly favors Marshall, because they had to go against Ohio State and they had to go against Virginia Tech. Statistically, this is for Louisiana. The Cajuns certainly would be the side here. I'm wondering, though, the mindset. You know, how is Marshall going to be like, you know, are they loyal to their old coach? You know, what is their effort going to be? You know, are they, you know, if the coach is leaving, or it's like, hey, we want this guy to be our coach and we want you to do right by him and keep him here. So are they going to come out, you know, hellfire and brimstone here? I don't know. The market has moved to UL Lafayette. I haven't bet this game. I don't think the market's necessarily wrong here, though.
Yeah. And Matt Zenitz, said he reached out to Charles Huff and said, and got this response. This was earlier this week. I have not accepted any jobs. We returned back to Huntington at 6 a.m. this morning, and I have been working on preparing this team for our first Sun Belt championship opportunity. That's where my sole focus and I look forward to a great week of practice and a chance to go make history here at Marshall University. And as friend of the podcast, Parker Fleming would say at Statso War on Twitter, not a denial. So just pointing that out there. So yes, a lot of smoke that Charles Huff will be headed to Southern Miss. We will see. And yeah, if it is a, what was it, Oregon State last year in their finale, they just got absolutely curb stomped when Jonathan Smith essentially had already taken the Michigan State job. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out. All right, two more games, Wes. Let's run through these ones, and they're big boys, both on Saturday night. Clemson, SMU, Penn State, Oregon, they both kick at 8 o'clock. Dealer's choice, sir, where would you like to start? You want to start in your hometown, or do you want to end in your hometown of Indianapolis?
Yeah, let's get the finale in the hometown, even though a lot of discussion has been had about how low the ticket price is to get into Lucas Oil Stadium, because Indy is a bad place to have big-time sporting events, as you know, Tim.
Wes was horrible. Fired up on social media.
I was not happy. Don't come for the Circle City, I will cut a you know what. don't come from my town now, Tim, you know that.
I'll say this, I have family in Indianapolis. It is a perfect town. It's a convention town. They're ready to host all of these things,
and they've always been a good host. But it's like when you have the farthest team in the conference and another team that's pretty far away, and now you have a college football playoff where teams, if they're going the distance, are at least going to play three games and maybe four. Yeah, maybe they're saving money for all these trips that they now have to make each week for this expanded playoff. So we'll get to that in a minute. But starting in the ACC down in Charlotte, of course, Clemson. It seems like they're here every damn year. What are they, 8-1 straight up and 7-2 against the number in ACC title games? SMU, first year in the conference, obviously has never been here before. I feel like SMU has been the better team throughout the season, where they have like the better stats, but Clemson's going to have the crowd edge clearly, and they also have more of the experience in this game. But I wonder, with so much on the line, because we talked about it at the top of the pod here, that is this a loser leave town match? This is the only one where I feel like, from a playoff standpoint, where it very, I guess, Iowa State, Arizona State, and Boise and UNLV, the winner goes, the loser doesn't. But, you know, there is a possibility. I guess both these teams could get in. I guess you could get SMU in if they lose a competitive game. But I kind of lean under here, under 56 or some 55.5 out there, because I think maybe these two teams get a little tight. You know, especially in the latter part of the game where it's so close, and, you know, you get that pressure. And I think that playoff pressure matters. And I think it accumulates on these teams. We talked about that a little bit with Boise State during the Mountain West discussion, because they've been the favorite. You know, hey, you're seeing your name every week in the college football playoff and on the rankings on Tuesday night. And now it's all of a sudden, you know, do you get tight late in a situation? We've seen them get tight in a couple of their conference games. And I wonder if that happens with SMU, because they're the lone team in the ACC this year that did go undefeated. I know, imbalanced schedule, so they didn't play all the top teams in the conference. But I don't know where to go with the side here, because Clemson, I like their experience, but I don't think they're the better team necessarily. But SMU worries me a little bit, like I just mentioned, if they get tight in a pressure situation that they didn't probably expect to be in. So I think if I go anywhere, I'm going under in this game, Tim. I see like maybe, you know, 24-20 or 27-24, something like that in this one.
Yeah, I need Cade Klubnik to avoid certainly a bad interception here, but I'm probably going to be on Clemson, and I'm going to see if we get a three. And, you know, before we get to the Big Ten championship, I'm curious your thoughts on this, because you and I, we stare at the odds board, you know, it feels like 24/7. And I want to see, you know, which way the market's moving. The number opened up at Circa on Sunday, Clemson 3. It's now SMU 2.5. And it's one thing for you to respect sharp moves, and I do. And I, you know, you go against sharp moves unless it's the Jets. You're not going to be a profitable bettor. But I'm just curious if this has gone too far. It's the last week of the season, and this is a 5.5-point move. That's pretty wild to see. Yeah. So If it gets to three, I'm going to have to be on Clemson here. And I still might be on Clemson at a plus price, whether it be on the money line or take the 2.5. Because just remember, Georgia, Georgia Tech, you go to overtime, that 2 points would certainly come into to a point spread. So I think I'm going to be on Clemson here. Haven't bet it yet. I'm just wondering if the market's going to take us to three.
Yeah, the tax, I do think, as you mentioned, is in the number here, because now, based on what we heard the committee say last night, it feels like this is a must win for SMU. I think there's perhaps some wiggle room, as we mentioned at the top of the pod here, but it feels like the pressure is a little bit more on SMU. Now, if you compare with the common opponents that they played this year, and the common opponents were Florida State, Louisville, Stanford, Pitt, and University of Virginia. Both teams were successful. Clemson was 4-1. SMU was 5-0. SMU got a little bit more margin in terms of the scoring, I think, certainly than Clemson did. So, you know, this is one I might stay out on the side at three. I would at least take a look at Clemson just because that line has moved too far. Clemson's the more experienced team, but I think the SMU Mustangs have had the better season and have been the better team throughout the season.
All right, let's wrap it up in your town. We go to Indianapolis. There was a big ass duck in what river was that over the summer?
That was the White River. The duck, an inflatable duck, made a visit for Big Ten Media Day there in August in Indianapolis, announcing their presence in the Big Ten Conference. And look, they announced their presence. They're the only undefeated team in all of FBS. So last time these two met, by the way, was 1995 in the Rose Bowl. 38-20 was won by Penn State. I think Kajana Carter was on that team. So you look, Oregon and Penn State, this is usually a Rose Bowl meeting, and now it's a Big Ten championship.
Yeah, and they announced their presence with authority, like Nukalush wanted to do in Bull Durham, but unable to do so once Crash Davis told the hitter what was coming. But I look at this game, and I'm staring at that line. And I know many of us, I did not, fell for the banana in the tailpipe that was Ohio State, Penn State's number. I'm real intrigued by the Nittany Lions here, catching 3.5. I'm curious your angle on this one, because it does feel like the public is going to load up on the Ducks in this spot.
Tim, this is Custer's last stand for me. I'm going to give Big Game James one more chance. Because
this is
got to be it. Eventually, you can't be too much of a glutton for punishment, and you have been if you've been backing James Franklin. I believe what is he? I had it written down here in terms of being a favor, or in terms of playing a top five opponent. He just has not lived up to it. I believe 1-16 straight up. And 5-12 against top five competition is James Franklin. He has not defeated a top five opponent since October 2016. He's lost 11 straight. So is this the old Vitas Gerulaitis quote when I believe Jimmy Connors had a big win streak against him, where he goes, "Nobody beats Vitas Gerulaitis 17 times in a row." So maybe maybe nobody, no top five team beats James Franklin 12 times in a row. But yeah, I'm going to wait on this one. I do think Oregon will be a publicly bet side here. I think Penn State has a little bit better of the defense here. And Tom Allen, former Indiana coach, has done, a very good job as defensive coordinator there. The problem with Penn State that I've had throughout the season is they just lack explosives in the passing game. And they don't have that dynamic receiver. They could certainly run the ball. They can run an efficient offense. They did tack one on late against Maryland last week to make it 44.
Mike Locksley was not happy.
I think Mike Locksley, I think, wanted to drop James Franklin there in midfield. And I honestly wouldn't have blamed him. Now, part of me is like, well, don't get beat by that amount of points. Like I said, Tim, I was a little bit of a hypocrite because I didn't like what Franklin did. But I damn sure love what Kurt Cignetti did because of my own personal pain and PTSD. Of watching IU get the wrong end on the bucket game, but over the years. But back to this one. Yeah, look, Oregon, I think, much better offense. I think Penn State, a little bit better defense. But I think that you might start to see a little pro versus Joe type of split here as we get later in the week. I do think Penn State is going to get a little bit of support from the wise guys, and you're going to have the public on the Ducks. Lowish total here, 50. I think that's about right. But look, Penn State eventually, I think, because they've been getting dogged all year, and somewhat rightfully so, that they didn't, that they were getting the benefit of the doubt without really any good wins, even though Illinois ends up being kind of their one. You know, we're already getting like March Madness talk here, resume win or marquee win. That was their one marquee win, I think, over the Illini. So Penn State's got a lot to prove here, I think. And certainly Oregon wants to finish off their inaugural year. Hey, we can come into your conference and win. So I think this number's about right. But I think I'm going to give Big Game James one more chance to be Big Game James instead of the Small Game James he has been now 11 times in a row.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll have my official card tomorrow, but I think Penn State, I think Clemson, and Tulane probably will all be on that card in some form or fashion. Wes, always appreciate it, sir. We'll be back knocking down your door to talk playoffs, to talk bowl games. We're starting to see some bowl games trickling out, so I expect a full breakdown of the Scooter's Coffee Frisco Bowl with West Virginia hosting Memphis at some point across my desk here shortly. But Wes, always appreciate it, my friend, and we will talk to you next week.
Or we could just do an hour talking about your playoff-bound Indiana Hoosiers.
The state of Indiana, two playoff teams. Who would have thunk it this year? And also the worst Power 5 team in the country, in Purdue. Wes, always appreciate it. By the way, 132-7 was the score of Purdue versus Notre Dame in Indiana this year. So, boiler up was not very there no. on the year.
No, they went ugly early at Harry's Chocolate Shop up there in West Lafayette.
Thanks to Ryan Hunter, as always, our producer behind the scenes. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Back tomorrow with Humans to break down the conference championship card. It is and has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.